I've never heard you say anything like that before.
I just said trinker. It's a normal word.
Oh, my God.
Problems.
All right. Have a good one, mister.
Can I win a t-shirt?
No. Get the hell out of here.
Wait till the end.
FMU, you're on the air.
So I found out why the noise goes away when people come over. When I open up the door.
Oh, my God. What the hell is wrong with that guy?
He discovered the CIA plot against him.
FMU, you're on the radio. Okay,
problem for us.
Wait, no, there's a good one on here. Other David says, you know what my problem is? I'm that dude that every lady complains to about other dudes. That is a major problem. He's like the friend, never the boyfriend.
What about the voices in my head are way too loud?
Yeah, that one's
I have
stupid,
that problem,
especially
too.
Especially since that person doesn't exist.
Someone's
you know what my problem is? Orlando says, women who think they are suddenly hot just because they got fake boobs. Someone just called you a shrinker? FMU, you're on the radio.
Howdy. You know what my problem is? If you don't say that, you're going to get hung up on.
Right, yeah. Okay, so what's the problem?
Ethnics standing behind ATM machines.
Uh-huh.
Because they take forever. This one time, there's like this whole queue of them, and I actually went down the road, and I actually got my cash out faster than the guy that was standing behind the queue, like in front of me. And that's like a whole 15 minutes.
You should have punched him. All right, thanks for calling. Have a good one.
That was Bob Dog Rodriguez calling from London.
FMU, you're on the air.
Yeah, darling. My problem is that these kids in my neighborhood, and they always toilet paper roll in my trees and my bushes. My camellia bushes are full of toilet paper as I speak.
Where do you live?
I'm from New Orleans, and I'm over here visiting, and my husband just told me that they did it again.
What's your name, sister?
My name's Gladys Clotworthy, honey.
Gladys, listen, I give a prize out to my favorite caller, and you might be my winner, so you should listen at the end of the hour.
Oh, Lord, what will I get?
You'll win a t-shirt.
And stuff.
Oh, I would love a t-shirt.
Yeah, so listen in the listen for the rest of the show, and I might name you as the winner.
Okay, honey.
All right, have a good one.
Have a good day.
Clock is ticking.
Oh, my God,
six minutes.
Best call we've ever gotten, ever. I love Gladys.
Gladys Clotworthy. You think that's a real name?
I don't know. Either way, I loved it. Clotworthy.
Sometimes the only way to find out if someone is like for real is to
make them the winner. Oh my God, we need nine more problems.
Nine more problems in 6 minutes.
FMU, you're on the radio.
Hi, I've got two.
Okay.
Yes.
My girlfriend lost her minimum wage job.
Oof.
Now I'm supporting
what
her
else?
And her two kids.
Ooh, that's
like eight problems in one. All right.
Does that count as eight?
Close.
We're very close.
Yeah.
All right, the other one, my last grandparent, my grandmother, has Alzheimer's and doesn't even recognize me anymore.
Oh, my grandma had Alzheimer's.
That's a big problem.
One time I was brushing your hair and she didn't know who I was and she slapped me.
Yeah.
Stop brushing your hair.
That stinks.
All right, have a good one. Good luck with those kids. FMU, you're on the radio.
Okay, here's my problem. I have a real problem with these Yahoos on TV shouting, USA, USA, like we just won a football game.
Or a hockey game.
I'm with you, mister.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say the name because, you know, I know you don't.
Yeah, that's not allowed on the air tonight.
I know, I understand. But, I mean, come on. All right, that's my problem.
All right, have a good one.
Thanks.
Mr. Johnny says, you know what his problem is? That Shut Up Weirdo's almost over. FMU, you're on the radio.
We'll be back next week.
I got two quick problems.
All right.
Yes.
My best friend's girlfriend's cheating on him.
Uh-huh.
And I'm banging my best friend's girl.
Oh, that's a big problem.
Is that one problem or two?
That's all one problem, I think.
I think that's all one problem. Oh, and we're so close, too.
Thanks a lot, mister. Have a good one. FMU, you're on the radio.
My problem is I got laid off a job paying $18 an hour. Now my only offer is minimum wage starting Monday. And I don't know what to do. The other problem is, I'm surprised nobody said people was the problem.
Someone did say that. Someone did say that.
Yes, I'm past halfway the show. And, anyway, my problem with people is that I always have to listen to them complain. And they expect sympathy. That's my big problem. Thank you.
That's their problem. Okay, have a good one.
That's our premise.
FMU, you're on the radio.
Yeah, I'm in a bad mood because I broke up with my girlfriend Sunday, and everybody saw me in a bad mood Sunday night, and they figured I was in a bad mood because Bin Laden died. And so everybody thinks I'm a terrorist now.
Well, but terrorism is over now, so that'll let up. Problem
yeah,
solved.
Yeah, but they just think I'm a sympathizer for them. But I'm really just in a bad mood because I'm not going to get laid for a week or two.
You're going to say I have other issues in my life.
Yeah.
Okay, have a good one.
Problem solved. Okay.
I have an announcement to make.
Yes, 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 yes.
We are at 98 problems.
Oh, the next one puts us over.
Dun, dun, dun. FMU, you're on the radio.
Rambling callers, musicians that suck and want praise, and coming in second every week in the prize running.
Guess what, mister?
I love you.
You were my 99th problem.
Yeehaw.
You know what that means?
That means Chris from Brooklyn's a winner.
That means I'm sending you a t-shirt.
Oh, boy. And dead air.
Shh. Just no talking.
Yourself.
Have a good one.
Bye.
I don't know if I can give it to him since he already called. Can I? Gladys Clotworthy, you are my new favorite caller. I want you to call every week. And if I have to send you a t-shirt to make that happen, I will. So send me your email address at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. I want your address and t-shirt size.
That's our email address. And all of you can write us at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. We have a website at shutupweirdo.com, which has links to our, help me remember here, Facebook and Twitter and iTunes and iPage and MySpace and Friendster. And I'm Andy.
We have like 4 minutes.
No, we have 1.5 minutes.
Oh, look, there's someone here. But
yes.
There's a call.
Does it go on to?
Yeah, real fast.
All right, real fast.
FMU, you're on the air.
Oh, 99. I didn't think you could do it.
Yeah, because we're awesome. Thank you for calling. Have a good one. All right. Let's end
you
it.
You have been listening to Shut Up Weirdo here on WFMU. WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live and archived at WFMU.org. I guess I said I'm Andy already.
I'm Frangry.
This is Shut Up Weirdo. Up next is Cinder's Crossroad filling in for Mr. Fine Wine. And then Chris T is in. I can't reach that.
Oh my God, this is so embarrassing.
No, it's not. Anyway, let's end it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, Josh and Chuck discuss the digital legacy that people leave behind after death. And then in part two, they examine dogs and their perception of time. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is one Charles W. Chuck Bryant. He's a good guy.
Which one are we doing?
Oh, we are doing privacy.
Great. That's how loose we play it here, people.
Loosey-goosey.
Sometimes.
Yeah. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm good.
I think we're both pretty pumped for these two subjects today.
Yeah. Mainly, I'm pumped about putting out a decent episode for once.
Once in your life.
I hope we do. I probably just jinxed us, or I'm going to overthink it.
No. This is great. It's gold.
Here we go.
All right.
Chuck.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of something called Death Switch?
Is it a movie?
Nope.
Was it a band?
No.
Should be.
I think Kill Switch is a band, though.
Okay.
And a thing. Maybe even a failsafe. But Death Switch is a service, an internet service. That you or I or any schmo with even a dial-up connection can go get. Okay. There's a free version of it where you can insert one email address and one message. And then there's a premium version where you can do up to 30 email addresses and all this other stuff. But the point of it is this. You set up all the stuff you want to say to people after you're dead.
Wow.
Whether it's like...
I knew it.
You know.
Sure.
See you in hell.
Right.
Or...
see you in heaven.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess that depends on your disposition or your bent.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I love you. Just wanted to tell you one last time. Or...
this is all your fault?
Freaking you out. Right. Like that kind of thing. Yeah. This is... I know what you did.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing. And, you know, with the premium service, you can attach things like movies and things like that. So you could
really?
Be like, hey, here's one last bootleg. I know you always like my pirated movies, so here's one more.
Wow.
No, but like video
yours
clips.
Would be Cutie Patootie.
Right. Because I'm a cutie. Cutie Patootie.
And you would have it sent to me every day for the next like 40 years.
Right. Well, I think it just goes out once. But the point is you create all these emails, and then DeathSwitch sits on them for you securely. They're secured.
Sure.
And then on a fixed schedule, they send you an email saying, hey, click this link and put in your password.
Like, basically, are you still alive?
Exactly.
Okay.
And if you don't answer, it does it again and again and again. And then, you know, there's a set amount of times where it starts to really kind of pepper you, like, hey, man, we're about to, like, you know,
send out the big
yeah,
email.
Yeah, that your boss is going to get that email if you don't
wow.
do this. And then it goes, okay, you're dead. You're either dead or you're in a coma or you're critically incapacitated. Can't even ask for a computer. And here you go. And it sends out your emails for you, which is pretty cool. And I think it's cool that anyone gets one free message from this company. You can do one email address with one message, no attachments or whatever, for free at deathswitch.com, which I own no shares or stake or any kind of financial interest.
God, I hope not. How much is the premium service?
I don't know.
I'm curious.
What am I? Like, am I your Google?
Well, you know, let me Google that for you.
So the point is, DeathSwitch mm-hmm. is kind of the service that straddles the line of what we're talking about today, which is privacy after death, mm-hmm. because they maintain your privacy while you're still alive, and then after you're dead, the whole point is to go blab whatever you want to blab, right?
Or at the very least, after you don't return their emails.
But the presence of DeathSwitch and the whole service it provides actually falls squarely on one side of what's kind of a pretty big moral, philosophical, ethical discussion I'm finding after researching this, and that is whether or not you do have any right to privacy after you're dead.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a pretty good... It was the Grabster who wrote this article, so of course it's quality.
He should get paid extra for this.
Yeah, we should at least get to meet him.
Yeah, he should come
by.
Have
you met him yet?
No, I emailed him a while back and was... I mean, early on, it was like, hey, dude, thanks
for... Oh, yeah, that's right. He replied, like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are you? Pod what?
Yeah. So the Grabster wrote this article. You know it's quality. He makes a really good point right out of the gate. Like, to understand whether or not we have any privacy rights after we're dead, let's first investigate the privacy rights we have when we're alive.
A good way to go about it.
And they are both at once sweeping and tenuous.
That's a good way to put it.
Thanks.
Well, the Constitution, if you're going to talk rights of American citizens at least,
mm-hmm.
no better place to start.
Yeah, because it says in the Constitution, everyone has the right to privacy.
No, it does not. It doesn't say that in that document or the Bill of Rights. But the Supreme Court over the years has interpreted the Constitution in such a way that it, in many cases, does provide a right to privacy based on, largely, Ninth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Ninth Amendment says that there's probably rights that the framers didn't think of.
Yeah, pretty broad.
Yeah.
Fourth Amendment, of course, unlawful search and seizure,
yeah.
My favorite. And the 14th Amendment... which is that the feds can't deprive you of life or liberty or property, buddy.
Right, and in that interpretation of liberty, privacy is a major aspect of that.
Sure.
So this is played out several times. Anything that's not in the Constitution that can be challenged means it's up to the Supreme Court to decide what's what. And they have generally sided with the rights of the individual to privacy time and time again. The government has had the back of its hand smacked when it's tried to say, hey, parents, you have to do this with your kids' education. You can't homeschool them, hippie. You need to put them in public school so we can teach them exactly what we want. And the Supreme Court said, no, no, no. They also said, by the way, you also can't outlaw sodomy between two consenting adults. Do you remember that time when there was like sodomy was illegal?
Yeah.
We were alive and sentient.
Yeah. Griswold, Lawrence v. Texas, 2003.
Yes, I know. That's pretty recent.
That was John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner were...
Lovers?
Lovers.
Boyfriend, boyfriend?
Boyfriend and boyfriend. They were committing an act of coitus, lovemaking, in the privacy of their own home, in the bedroom, even.
Yeah. And it was consensual. That's a big one, too.
Very much consensual. And in 1998, and a sheriff's deputy entered the apartment with his weapon drawn because a call had been made by their neighbor saying that there was someone waving a gun and there was a domestic dispute going on.
Huh.
So the sheriff goes in there, see these two guys are doing it, and they're like, you're under arrest for doing that.
Huh.
And as it comes out later, the neighbor...
He's like, do you see this phallic symbol I'm holding in my hand?
It turns out the neighbor that had reported this was previously in a relationship with one of those dudes.
Oh.
It was a false, not charge, but what do you call it? A false report. And he was convicted of 15 days in jail for making that call.
Can you believe petty jealousy ended up changing the law under the Supreme Court?
I know. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
But they basically went to the Supreme Court, and in a 6-3 ruling, they said, you know what, dudes? You can do that deed.
Nice.
In your bedroom there.
Good for you, Chuck.
Good for Texas.
Good for Texas. Good for the gay community as well.
Sure.
There's this great, did you ever read any Akbar and Jeff comics? Matt Groening stuff from, like, Life is Hell?
I knew Life is Hell, but I'd never heard of the other. Was that part of that?
Akbar and Jeff was part of it. The two guys who looked like twins who both wore fezes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was one where it was like they were both sitting on the couch together, and it said like they were watching the news, and it said like from the TV, sodomy has been outlawed, and like they move apart on the couch, and then they move back together, and they go, damn the law. That's pretty good.
The first case you mentioned, though, was Meyer versus Nebraska, and that was in 1920. A teacher was teaching German to a student, and they busted in and arrested him. They're like, you're not teaching anyone German.
You need to be teaching them freedom language.
Exactly.
A.K.A. American.
But he won. And then in Connecticut, two people, a Planned Parenthood director and a physician, opened a birth control clinic, and they were arrested for selling contraceptives, but that was overturned.
Right.
So they're siding with the people.
So those are cases of privacy, you know, basically based on what you do in your own home or what
business,
you do in
sure.
your own educational system. Business not so much, because you can't refuse service to somebody based on like their skin color or anything.
Yeah, but you can sell contraceptives, that's what I meant.
You totally can.
Yeah.
You can sell contraceptives to anybody you want. But those are all based on the idea that it's what you're doing in your own home, it's your own private business, that kind of thing, right?
Sure.
But there's actually an act, there's a federal act that says you have privacy, especially when it comes to government agencies, and that's the Federal Privacy Act, appropriately named, of 1974, that came about at the time when people were just starting to figure out what computers were capable of.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, wow, those punch cards can do this. And the public realized that, wait, there's databases now, and you don't have to walk all the way across Washington, D.C. to get my file, which means you're not going to do that, so I'm safe. Now you can cross-reference things from agency to agency.
Yeah.
And my information is just up for grabs way more than it ever was before. So in response, the federal government passed the Federal Privacy Act of 1974, which basically says you can go up to the EPA and be like, hey, feds, I want to see my file. And they have to show it to you.
What's interesting is it certainly doesn't cover them getting the information for that file.
No.
It just covers the dissemination of that information.
And if you walked up to the FBI and said, "Hey, Fed, let me see what you got on me." Yeah, exactly.
Taken to a back
They'd be like,
room.
Sure, come in.
It's right over
come
here.
Come in. Can we get you some coffee?
It's like De Niro when Lorraine Bracco comes to him at the end. He's like, no, just a little further.
Right.
Just go in that building right there.
Right. See that fur? Go get you a fur. Yeah, if the FBI ever offers you a fur,
yeah, you're in
trouble. Just walk away if you can. So that was a pretty landmark act, and that's definitely one of the. In addition to the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Constitution, it forms a pillar. The other pillar, strangely enough, came out of the Clinton years, and it is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, which you might be familiar with from filling out like doctor's forms and stuff. Basically, it's saying like here's the HIPAA waiver.
Not potability.
No, portability.
That'd be weird.
Yeah.
Because then you could drink it. You can't drink an act.
No.
Sorry. 1996, and that basically covers medical information and things that like your doctor or your insurance provider can disseminate about you.
Right. And so you put all that together, and you have a pretty reasonable right to privacy.
Yeah.
And at the very least to see what the feds have on you, depending on whether they're law enforcement or not.
Exactly.
So if you are alive, these are the rights that are afforded to you. Alive and a member of America, the American family, right?
A card-carrying member.
The moment you die, though, that Privacy Act, the Federal Privacy Act of 1974, is like, you're dead to me. You no longer are, you have no rights whatsoever under my umbrella, Ella.
That is true. Explicitly says so. HIPAA is the opposite. It actually extends those rights very plainly to your family and says, you know what, your family is now in charge of this, and it's completely transferred. The permission for information sharing is given completely to them.
Right. The whole aspect of, well, it's your estate. It's part of your estate.
Yeah.
The right to say, yeah, that person can have access to those medical information, whatever.
Yeah.
That passes to the survivor. So HIPAA is real strict. Federal privacy, it's like you're dead. HIPAA is like
you're alive. You live on.
You'll live forever. It's called descendant. There's a descendancy of the right. It's a descendable right. I'm sorry. And so too is something called the right of publicity.
Yeah, this was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so there was this thing that came out of the 1950s when baseball stars started saying, like, hey, wait a minute, man, I'm not that hip with this guy coming out and taking my picture and, you know, putting it on Tops, and then Tops making money. I should be able to make some money. That's my picture.
Yeah.
And everybody went,
but these are just baseball cards.
Yeah, yeah. And then afterwards somebody, you know, one of the baseball players said, no, they're not. There's more to it. And everybody said, oh, okay, maybe you're right. We give in, baseball star.
Yeah.
So that out of that came the idea of the right to publicity, which is a celebrity, somebody who can make money off of their image, their likeness, their identity, down to...
like you.
Or you. Down to, like, Einstein's identity is owned, actually, by the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Yeah. He willed it to him.
And most people's identities are managed by their estate. And when you're talking about famous folks.
Right. There's also a company called CMG Worldwide out of Indiana.
Unbelievable.
Their business model is collecting rights of publicity, like buying them off of estates or managing them for estates. But basically their thing is licensing the identity of a dead person.
Unbelievable.
So do you remember, wasn't it like a Coors commercial or whatever, and John Wayne was in it?
I remember... I sort of remember that, but I definitely remember Fred Astaire was in a Dirt Devil commercial, like Dancing with a Broom.
Right. Now, if he...
Or the broom became the Dirt Devil, I think that was the deal.
Right. Now, if his family exercises their right to publicity of his estate, Dirt Devil paid to use his likeness.
Yeah, I wish I would have remembered to look that up. I can't remember which way that one went because there was a stink over it.
Well, the thing is likely even if you are big on privacy, right? Your right to publicity is taxable. So even if Fred Astaire's heirs said no, he wanted to rest in peace. He didn't want to do any more dancing, especially not any CGI dancing. He just wanted to be dead. they likely did charge for that rather than just granting permission because they have to pay taxes on the right to publicity, whether they use it or not.
How do they figure that?
I don't know, Chuck.
I think that might have been Gene Kelly, actually, come to think of it.
No, I think it was Fred Astaire.
I'm picturing Gene Kelly.
Huh. Well, you know we'll eventually know the
maybe
answer.
Gene Kelly was the broom.
Gene Kelly was always the broom to Fred Astaire. It's not fair.
It varies. And actually, in most of the world, the right of publicity does end at death. But in the U.S., it's a state law issue.
Yeah, state by state.
In New York, it terminates at death. But other states, like Tennessee, Washington, and Indiana, which govern the rights of Elvis Presley, mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix, mm-hmm. and CMG is based out of Indiana. Probably no accident.
Yeah.
They say the control of the identity is secured for a term from ranges from like 100 years to forever.
Right.
Which is really interesting.
And like we said, it's the person's image, it's their likeness, it's their identity. And like the Hebrew University of Jerusalem mm-hmm. sued some costume maker for creating a wig and a mustache yeah. that it was, you know, based on Einstein.
Well, did they call it the Einstein, though?
Probably.
Because I went wig shopping the other night. I really did for El Cheapo's playing a come as your favorite rock star party. So we were like, well, we got to be dressed up as well. So we went wig shopping, and they had, that's where and this is before we knew we were even doing this podcast. They had wigs that were clearly people, living and dead, but they were just named something different.
Right. Now,
like Shock Jock was the Howard Stern.
Right.
They had an Amy Winehouse one called the Rehab Wig.
Jeez.
I know.
See, now, her family probably just isn't aware of that. I'm sure they would have a lawsuit on their hands. They could sue an American court if it's an American company.
See if you can guess Top Hat Rocker.
Hold on. Edgar Winner.
Oh, that's good. Slash.
Who?
Slash, of course. But what was funny was among this wall of wigs of thinly veiled names, there was a Snooki wig, and it was Snooki.
Yeah.
With her face on it. So she was like, sure, I'll take money.
Right.
Make a wig.
Yeah. Well, yeah, wouldn't you if you were Snooki?
I'd do it if I was Chuck.
So that's the right to publicity. That and the HIPAA protection are defendable rights. So it's passed along.
Yeah. And Einstein, his estate makes $76 million a year.
Well, they did in the last 5 years.
Oh, five combined?
Yeah.
No.
But that's a lot.
No, that's a ton.
Yeah.
And that's Einstein. And like, I knew Elvis and Hendrix and those guys. And like, well, actually, Marilyn Monroe's in the public domain, isn't she?
Yes, she is. And there was a fight over that. The California tried to basically pass like a lover boy law. I just made up that term, but it makes sense.
Where they said that everyone has to work for the weekend?
Right. Everyone has to wear bandanas. Where they said like Marilyn Monroe's estate is part of the right to publicity as a descendable thing.
Sure.
I guess somebody didn't want that way, and they went to the trouble of proving that she was a resident in New York at the time of death, so T.S.,
well,
California.
Well, and it's fortuitous that you mentioned Monroe, or maybe I did, because autopsy photos come into play here, and her death photos,
arguably among the sexiest death photos of all time, probably.
Autopsy photos have generally, and murder scene photos have been generally protected from release when someone submits for the Freedom of Information Act and says, hey, we want to see these photos. And the courts have generally said, no, you know what, you can't.
Right. Well, with Freedom of Information Act, that's this thing that's this spearhead into the heart of
both of the other acts.
HIPAA and the Freedom of Privacy Act.
Yeah.
Because it's this catch-22. It's like the government is tasked with, if they're going to gather information on you and keep it, they have to protect it. It's your privacy.
Yeah.
But government also has to be transparent. So if somebody asks about your information, the government has to give it to them under a Freedom of Information Act. Unless, again, if it has to do with law enforcement, they're just going to turn you down outright.
Yeah.
But on a case-by-case basis, it's usually decided whether or not they're going to grant it. And a lot of times they kick it to the courts and let the courts decide. And there have been some big ones. Usually the court rules in favor of or rules against the Freedom of Information Act, especially when they feels like there's going to be harm to the family.
Yeah, if it's harmless or if it's been like many, many years, they might allow it. But The one that the Grabster mentions in here was the Vincent Foster case, who was the attorney who killed himself in 1993, who worked for the Clintons, or the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was, I think, a Whitewater guy, too. So he'd been with the Clintons for a while.
Well, when he committed suicide, there were photographs of the scene, and they were not made public. So conspiracy people filed an FOIA, whatever report you have to fill out, and said, we want to see these photos.
Yeah.
And they said, no.
Yeah, apparently the guy still managed to get 4 Polaroids released, which was a Herculean effort. Yeah.
Good for him.
If you want to spend a full day at least, just go ahead and type in Vince Foster.
Oh, I'm sure.
And click on the whatreallyhappened.com thing on it. It's extensive, exhaustive.
I'm sure.
Dale
Earnhardt, more recently, was, he crashed and was killed in, at the Daytona 500.
Yeah. Did you ever hear he apparently died, like, flipping off the guy who, like...
Really?
Who spun him out? Yeah. That's what I heard.
Hey, that's a nice way to go out, at least.
Yeah.
Screw you, buddy.
Yeah.
The Florida courts rejected the plea to release those photos in the newspaper. In the Supreme Court, they said, you know what, we're not even going to entertain this case. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Florida passed a law, another lover boy law, to prevent these photos from being released.
Really?
That's a lover boy law, man.
Okay. I was silent because I was scanning my brain for another lover boy line, but I couldn't think of one.
Chuck, even more recent than Dale Earnhardt's death, that whole kerfuffle over his death photos. There's been a couple, but one was the News of the World phone hacking scandal.
I don't know about that one.
Okay. Let me enlighten you to the despicableness of what News of the World was capable of and was doing for a while.
It's not Weekly World News.
No, it's
my favorite
paper. Yeah, RIP. That was
Oh,
good.
Is that not around anymore?
No, it's not. It's a News Corp, which is a Rupert Murdoch-owned paper that's uh-huh. now under. It was headed by a woman named Rebecca Brooks, and she's now gone. As a matter of fact, News of the World is gone because of all this. They were hacking like voicemail accounts of like everybody, the royals,
wow.
celebrities. But the one that was really, just really awful was the voicemail of a 13-year-old girl named Millie Dowler, who in 2002 went missing. While she was missing, this is big news in England.
Yeah.
News of the World had some private detective hack her voicemail and were listening to her voicemail messages. And the mailbox was full, so they started deleting them so that people could leave more if possible, so they could hack more and report on more.
What were they trying to get?
Just any information they possibly could,
because
the girl was still missing. She was dead at the time, but
so
no
were they
one
trying
knew
to help,
that.
Like get clues?
No.
Okay.
They were trying to get more leads. A full mailbox and a dead girl who's not getting her mail isn't going to help anybody as far as News of the World was going. So they just deleted some after they'd listened and written stories on them.
Trying to get news story leads, not case leads.
Exactly.
Okay.
All stories. Like no one had any idea they were doing this. So the girl's parents thought she was still alive and was deleting her email or her voicemail.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a very big deal. It also threw off the cops, too. It hindered the investigation. So everybody who has anything to do with that has now been executed by the state in Great Britain.
Well, that brings up a good point, though, is this stuff a crime? And it sort of depends on the law. HIPAA actually does enforce criminal penalties if you knowingly share medical information, like selling Madonna's pap smear, for instance. You could be put in jail for that.
I almost just did a spit take, a genuine one.
Really?
Did that happen?
No, it was in the movie Slacker.
Oh, okay. Man, that was close.
But I bet stuff like that does happen for sure.
Oh yeah.
More often than not, though, there will be civil penalties instead of criminal ones, and you won't be going to jail. But you can slander someone after death.
You can.
Well,
depending on what state you're in.
They don't call it slander. You can say what you want after death.
It's well, there's anti-defamation laws.
Right.
In, like, California is one state. That was the only state I could find. In most states, it's like, no, you can say whatever you want about somebody sure. after they've died. But there's something of a movement toward getting anti-defamation laws in place for the deceased. And it's based on this philosophical debate, like, can you harm a dead person?
Right.
What do you think? What's your opinion?
I don't know. It seems like it would be a nice thing for your privacy rights to extend after death.
Sure. But I mean,
in the name of respecting the dead.
Right. But so in the U.S., you've noticed, like, most of the court cases were, they were looking out for the family, the survivors. This yeah. is about, like, the person, the individual, even people who, like, you don't know any of their survivors. They lived long enough ago that no one has any idea.
Right.
But the whole basis of it is that, like, through our lifetime, through our life's work, our accomplishments, our reputations, we build this thing that's called an identity, a legacy,
mm-hmm.
and it survives us after death. And that's what can be defamed, and that's how you can harm a dead person if you believe that you can harm a dead person. And so that's kind of the basis of the drive to
right.
get people on board, like, hey, let's all just
sure.
be nice about dead people. But
well, and in this day and age of the electronic life, your emails, your Facebook account, like, it brings up a whole different... Can I tell you a really, really sad, tragic story?
Always.
Speaking of Facebook... I found a old friend from 25 years ago on Facebook by chance, and I was like, oh, haven't thought of her in literally 25 years. She looks great. How's she doing? Mm-hmm. Sent her a friend request, blah, blah, blah. I was kind of on her Facebook page, and then I saw a photo of her with her kid that said, and someone said, like, very bittersweet to look at this, and I thought, oh, man, I guess her kid must have passed away. That's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Scroll down a little more. She had passed away like 2 weeks previous.
Wow.
This girl of like in the middle of the night passed away. I was on her face, had already sent the friend request, and I was like, oh my God. And for some reason, it just stuck with me for a few days. It was,
I
haven't seen her in that long, but I was just like, all of a sudden, there's this Facebook page with pictures everywhere, and hey, this was me last week.
Right.
And now I'm not here. And then, you know, her kids had posted. You know, like, they kind of took over her account where people were leaving memorial messages
right.
and things like that.
Yeah.
So, and they bring up in the article, you know, typically 90 days after an inactive account, they'll shut it down. I don't know if that's Facebook specific, but...
Well, Facebook apparently has a policy in place where if you can prove you're a family member or something like that, they will revert control of it to you.
Yeah.
It basically becomes a memorial page. Like,
yeah.
Yumi was friends with DJ AM
oh, really?
On Facebook for some reason. Yeah, so and she still is. And his page is now like a memorial page. People
yeah.
post on it like a couple of times a day, every day still.
Well, and I think that's what Facebook's trying to create here with their whole new system that's rolling out is like, this is your life.
Right.
Collected.
Yes, and we own it. Yeah. If you want to know more about basically what we're talking about is whether or not you leave a digital legacy... afterward, stuff to blow your mind. Our colleagues Robert and Julie covered that, didn't they?
Yeah, stuff to blow your mind.
So you can search that on iTunes, or you can go to the Stuff to Blow Your Mind RSS page just by searching Stuff to Blow Your Mind RSS on your favorite search engine. And if you want to read this really good article by The Grabster, you can search Do You Have a Right to Privacy After You Die?
Yeah.
How about privacy after death in the search bar at howstuffworks.com?
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called Do You Lose the Right to Privacy When You Die? Originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on October 20th, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine dogs and dog time, specifically the canine perception of the time-space continuum. This episode was originally podcast on September 17th, 2009.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles Chuck Bryant. Chuck Bryant. Yes, nice, Chuck. We'll get to that in a second. Do it again. That's awesome. Chuck's barking because this is Stuff You Should Know, and this particular Stuff You Should Know is entitled, How Do Dogs Perceive Time?
And I said in dog language just then... I don't perceive time. That is up for debate, my friend. Up for vigorous debate.
All right.
So, Chuck, let me do a little intro here, a little lead-in, segue, whatever.
I know, I spoiled your parade there.
What do we call them these days?
What do we what?
Segues, lead-ins, intros?
Intro.
Schmeckles?
Schmeckles.
Chuck, about a year ago, a year ago this month, Paris, France,
mm-hmm.
made history, legal history.
How so?
They actually used a dog as a witness in a criminal case.
Did they get the dog to, like, bark at someone?
Yep.
Wow.
I kid you not.
Well, like an intruder?
At the very least, and I hope I'm not a Bangladeshi newspaper here, because I found it in the Daily Mail,
uh-huh.
which is not known for satire, but it can be known for poor reporting from time to time. But
so you may have egg on your face soon?
We'll find out. But there was a dog named Scooby that was brought into a...
sounds less believable.
It does, doesn't it? I should have forwarded you this article. There was a dog named Scooby that was brought into a murder case or a hearing to see if there was enough evidence to try a man for murder.
Wow.
For something that was ruled a suicide, and the dog barked furiously at the alleged perpetrator.
And they gave him a Scooby snack?
Yeah. So that was the last I heard. It was from a year ago. But there was some concern over whether the dog's memory would serve it or not, because it had been 2.5 years since the incident.
Okay, that makes sense. And that's kind of key to how dogs may or may not perceive time.
It's the best I could come up with.
That's great.
Thanks. So what that betrays is a sense by at least the reporter and the courts in Paris that dogs have a memory, that they if they have a memory, then they should be able to perceive time, right?
Right.
Chuck, let's talk about this. What is time?
Oh, dude. Are you kidding me? Well, you know my whole deal with time. I've said it before.
What?
Well, time is just abstract. Numbers on a calendar and hands on a watch aren't time.
Well, yeah, no. What you're talking about is the human construct of time.
Yes.
Based on 24 hours,
which
right?
is all kind of arbitrary.
Seven
really.
Days in a week, 30. Well, not necessarily.
Well, not anymore. It's not.
Here's why. It was actually kind of ingenious that we should come up with a 24-hour day. Because we have these things called circadian oscillators.
Yes.
Which are they're the fluctuators in our circadian rhythm, which
hormones.
Is what makes us fall asleep at night, wake
right.
up in the morning.
Body temperature.
Get hungry at certain times.
Neural activity.
Right. The neural activity and the hormones are reactions to things like changes in temperature
yeah.
that are on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Things like the changes in natural light.
Right, sure.
Right? So our reactions to these are circadian oscillators, and if you put them all together, like sleeping at night and waking up in the morning, that's our circadian rhythm.
Right.
But these circadian clocks actually exist on about a 24-hour period.
Well, that makes sense then.
So, but like you said, days on the calendar and all that, that is a human construct.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we're trying to get to the bottom of is whether or not dogs can perceive this, not necessarily the human construct of time,
right.
but of time in and of itself, which is essentially a past, present, and future.
Exactly. And I know that one thing that we will talk about, and maybe we'll talk about right now, is you have three dogs.
Do you have any dogs?
I have two dogs.
What?
Shut up. I have two dogs, and I'm actually fostering two feral puppy rescues, which you know. So right now I have four
dogs.
Do
you want to get rid of those two dogs? Because we could get rid of them like that if we plug this on this podcast.
Yeah, we're kind of picky about who we give them to.
Okay, well, how about this? If you're not a creep and you love dogs...
and you live in the East Lake area
of
Atlanta.
Send us an email if you want one of Chuck's puppies.
Very cute.
Yeah.
So anyway, if your dogs are anything like my dogs, they... and actually my cats, too. They know when the food bell is going to ring.
Sure.
Actually, they start... Emily calls it food abuse. They start the food abuse typically about an hour and a half before they typically get fed every afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, we feed them pretty much straight away in the morning, so they know then. But my dog Lucy, dude, comes in the room and looks at you with her head cocked, stamps on the floor with her feet, and goes, "Hur, hur." And I'm waiting for her literally to one day say, "Feed me." One day, I told Emily if she did that one day, I would be surprised for about a second.
So, Chuck, here is where we reach the bone of contention.
Right.
Sorry for that pun. I'm not Jonathan Strickland.
Your dogs do the same thing, though, I assume, right?
Well, no, my dogs are fed constantly. They always have food. They, for some reason, I lucked out, and
they just eat whenever they want, whenever they're hungry. Can't imagine that.
It's pretty cool.
My dogs eat their food like it's the first time they've ever been fed.
I've seen that before. My dogs, they're pretty laid back when it comes to stuff like that.
Are they fat?
No,
really?
No, they're healthier than I am.
Well, they don't.
They're healthier than a lot of people I know. No, they're very. They regulate their food intake on their own. It's weird.
That's so weird.
But I know what you're talking about. So the question is this: do your dogs know, based on past experience, that food is coming at a certain time of day? Not necessarily like 5:35 p.m., but say, as far as the dog's concerned, when sun is low in sky over there.
Right. Are they Native American?
Right, yeah. I was going to say. No, they're like Italians playing Native Americans.
Right.
Well, you think I'm dumbbell?
Or is it a circadian oscillator? Well, that's the circadian oscillator.
It could be, yeah. It could be. What that is they're using their memories of past experiences to predict the future, which is episodic memory,
right,
which is our construction of time. Or is this semantic memory, which is totally different but related? Do you want me to go into this? Because this is outside research.
Well, I have no choice then.
Semantic memory is, all right, Chuck, let's say that you have brain damage to your frontal lobe.
I do, in fact.
Which is where your episodic memory is,
right,
is located. That's the region that controls episodic memory, which is learning from experience, right? You could conceivably learn how to play chess, right?
Right.
But you won't remember where you learned how to play chess.
Right, much like they say a baby learns how to walk and talk, but they don't remember that day you taught me how to walk.
Right, they don't have to relearn crawling or walking or talking.
On a day-to-day basis.
Right,
sure.
Because they learned it, and that's semantic memory. That's like facts and rules and possibly motor movements or whatever. Or, you know, if I run into this wall, it's going to hurt my face because I'm crawling.
Right, right.
But they don't remember, somebody teaching them, like, come crawl to me, that kind of thing, right? So, yeah, that's semantic memory. Episodic memory would be like, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a fruit smoothie.
You had a fruit smoothie.
I remember what the light looked like. I remember what it smelled like.
That is precisely episodic memory. And I should probably give a shout-out to T.R. Zental, who I'm like just blatantly ripping off right now. The chess example was one of Zental's examples of semantic memory. And what you've just said is almost word for word an example of episodic memory. You said, you know, you remember these other details.
Sure.
Whereas had you said, I had a smoothie this morning, I must have because I always have a smoothie, right? That would be, well, not the burping part, but if you always had it,
then
that'd be more like semantic memory.
Okay.
So we reached the question, do dogs perceive time, or are these reactions that appear like they're keeping track of time some way, maybe through a circadian oscillator, based on semantic memories? And there's been a lot of studies, not necessarily on dogs, but on other animals, right?
Yeah. What's this crackpot's name?
Roberts?
No, what's this guy's name? Dr. Roberts?
Yeah. Oh, I have to say, I'm going to take issue with Dr. Roberts.
Yeah, William Roberts. He's an animal cognition researcher.
Right.
Right off the bat, you're taking issue with that.
Not that
title.
Part.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, he did some studies on pigeons and primates, to name a couple, and long-term and short-term memory as far as remembering a sequence that they would, I guess the pigeons would peck it out and the primates would tap it out and to get a reward. And they found that they'd have a pretty good short-term memory for this kind of thing.
Right, which is what that's working memory, right?
Yes.
But and long-term is reference memory?
Yeah, but as far as the reference goes, they couldn't remember it that well if there was a big break in between.
Right. Roberts actually wrote a very famous paper as far as animal cognition goes, where he basically said that he concluded animals are stuck in time. And I just made air quotes for those of you out there listening in podcast land. And by stuck in time, he means that they live exclusively in the present, that they don't have the capacity for forming long-term
episodic memory.
Episodic is the key word.
It is very much the key
word. Because I know at home you're saying, no, I taught my dog to sit when she was one. That's not the same thing. That's what we're talking about with the baby learning how to walk.
Right. But that's not – there's a lot of examples out there in nature mm-hmm. that would kind of belie Dr. Roberts's idea that animals or dogs are stuck in time. Well, a good one is squirrels foraging food.
Stocking up for the winter.
To store for the winter and yeah. doing it year after year after year. I believe Roberts actually addressed that and says – but they continue hoarding even when their stores inexplicably disappear, which I assume some researchers went and stole squirrels' nuts and then studied them to see what they would do. I don't understand that at all.
I don't either. It seems like that would make them want to hoard.
Yeah. So I kind of have an issue with that one a little bit, but it's possible I'm not entirely seeing that point all the way.
I don't see the point. I'm not quite sure what he meant there.
But there's also one about the bananas, right? Chuck, there were some primates that were given choices between more or less bananas.
Yeah, and predictably, at first, if you offered an ape one banana or two bananas, they're going to take the two bananas.
Sure.
But they found that when they started increasing the number of bananas, like 10 compared to 20, they would just go for the 10 bananas. They wouldn't – he thought this meant they can't – they have no concept of the future. Like, maybe I should take these bananas because I might be hungry tomorrow.
Right. Now, that's I think Roberts fails to take into account social structure.
Sure.
Right? We know that we could use 10 bananas for tomorrow, but we also have things like preservation techniques mm-hmm. or refrigeration available to
that's
us.
That's what I thought, too.
And if you go back in time just a few thousand years ago, to hunter-gatherer societies or even hunter-gatherer societies that are around now, they don't store food at all. They forage for what they need right then, and that's what they eat. I would imagine that would actually explain a lot of the primate decisions. There's no real reason to. Their society right. isn't set up on this idea that I need more and more to protect myself in the future.
Exactly.
I don't know that necessarily means that they don't have any concept of the future. I think that there's all these other explanations out there.
Right, and they may, like one, when I read that, the first thing I thought was maybe they've never taken more than 10 bananas in their life because they've never needed to, so it doesn't even
right.
dawn on them that that should be something they would do.
Exactly. Well, I guess what we're saying, both of us are on the same page here, there are other explanations.
I agree.
And I think one of the things I took from this article was that Roberts found it conclusive that animals are stuck in time by cherry-picking some studies here.
Yeah, we kind of disagree with them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other factors. I know that my dog Lucy is stuck in time at 5:30 p.m. every day.
Yeah.
Because she's always asking for the food.
So I guess another problem, it's entirely possible, Chuck, that our brains just aren't big enough to they're not as big as Robert's brain.
Maybe.
Did you ever hear that, like, goldfish have an 8-second memory span?
I've never heard that.
So I have, right?
You have a goldfish in your cube?
I do have a goldfish here.
Very cutie.
Yeah, Molly. She's very cute.
Is named Molly? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But having an episodic memory makes it almost impossible to think about not having one. So, like, if a goldfish does have a memory of 8 seconds, mm-hmm. does it mean that every 8 seconds all of its memories are purged, like getting rid of the browser history in your computer? Or as new experiences come into the present, are older ones pushed out after they hit this 8-second maturity level?
Right. And how do they test that on a goldfish anyway?
Perfect, Chuck. Perfect segue. Here's the biggest problem. Robert's position is almost inherently speciesist. You familiar with this term?
Yeah.
This is a legitimate term. I'm not making this up.
Animals have no souls.
Animals don't have souls. It's impossible for a dog to be happy because
right.
that's a secondary emotion and
dogs
aren't self-aware enough. There's a competing explanation for all of this. Speciesists tend to rely very strictly or remain very strictly within the structure provided by the scientific method.
And all his studies here, he probably came at it from that frame of mind, too.
Sure, right. But there's another way of looking at it, and that is that humans simply haven't come up with tests that are clever enough to
right.
get definitive proof that an animal can experience happiness or can
or is aware of time, the future, the past, that kind of thing. You can take that way too far. Like after, you know, test after test after test that proves the opposite, you could still conceivably say, well, there's a test out there that we haven't come up with yet proves that they can. But I think that the testing that has been done is very much below that threshold so far.
Yeah.
I don't think we have a clue what animals are capable of as far as consciousness goes, because we have such a loose grasp on our own consciousness.
Sure, and we can't certainly can't delve into an animal's brain and see what they think, and they can't tell us anything. I guarantee you one thing. I bet you Dr. Roberts is not a dog owner.
Agreed.
Agreed, because you have dogs, dude, and I guarantee you we're going to get tons of mail from people saying, are you kidding? My dog displays emotion every day. And, you know, I guess Caesar, the dog whisperer, might say, you know, that's you're putting your human construct on the dog's frame of mind.
Yeah. Anthropomorphizing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. My dog is – they're both pretty emotional.
Well, yeah, anthropomorphizing is the go-to ammunition for speciesists.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that anybody who's saying, like, no, animals can't be happy because it's secondary emotion and they lack that sense of self-awareness that's required to experience a secondary emotion is a speciesist. But the two often go hand in hand, and it's really interesting that there's a line drawn right now between people who think animals don't have a soul and people who think animals can be happy and all of the implications that come with that.
Jerry, I bet you think your dog has a soul, right?
Jerry's saying yes.
Jerry just gave the sweetest face and nodded yes.
Yeah. Yes, so I feel like Chuck and I just opened a big old can of worms, so we'll see how this plays out in the emails, right?
Yeah.
If you want to read more about dogs perceiving time, to answer the question, according to Roberts, no, dogs don't perceive time. Time's a human construct consisting of a past, present, and future, and dogs pretty much live in the present. Chuck and I don't necessarily agree with that one. You can go on and type in dogs perceive time in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. Since I just said that, it means it's time for a whole mess of listener mail.
You are right. Josh, this is, we're just going to call this Muppet Mail. And we are going to go on a little longer than usual with our mail because the Muppet podcast, I think we will all agree, was sort of a sea change episode.
And plus, we just want to see how long this background music actually goes for.
I know. I mean, we literally got better response from the Muppet Show episode than anything we've ever done, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
The Henson Company twittered about it.
Yeah. Heather Henson, we should say our colleague and friend Jonathan Strickland of Tech Stuff fame, his sister
knows
is friends with Heather Henson, and it went viral thanks to him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So we got great response. It's clear that everyone loves the Muppets, and so I wanted to go just through a few of these because I didn't want to just do one. Quickly, before we start, and we never do this, but a guy sent me an email, and I kind of touched a chord with me. So I want to quickly give a shout-out for Joe to Beth in Elwood, Indiana. And Joe just wants to say that he thinks that you are a pretty cool chick, Beth.
Chuck, are you playing matchmaker? Is that why you're wearing nothing but a diaper and you have those wings on your back?
I'm not saying. But Beth and Elwood, Joe thinks you're a cool chick, and so do we. Because she actually sent us a Alien Hand Syndrome video, which rocked.
Cool.
That was good. I'll show it to you.
Yeah,
quick couple of things that we didn't mention in corrections, first of all. I mistakenly refer to the Children's Television Workshop as the Children's Television Network, so I goofed that one.
You're thinking of Home Shopping Network.
I was.
For kids.
We did not mention every Muppet movie. We did not mention every Muppet venture because...
No, I want to elucidate on this. We did that on purpose. First of all, we mentioned the three that were in theatrical release.
Directed by Jim Henson.
Yes, and by first of all, I mean that's it.
Right.
Right.
So a lot of people said, how could you not mention Muppet's Christmas Carol? And we wanted to mention everything, but... We would have been sitting here reading things all day long about the Dark Crystal and other Muppet ventures. So we chose to only do the Henson ones.
Which I have to say, Dark Crystal, that creeps me out still.
Yeah.
To this
and that
day.
Was Henson too, because I know people are going to write and say that was Henson, but get over it.
Right.
We had a guy named Peter wrote in, and he told us about the Muppet Whatnot Workshop.
Yeah, at not Goldman Sachs. At
F.A.O. Schwartz.
Yes.
And you can go to New York City, and you could do it online, but I looked, and it's down right now. But
I think it's just around Christmas time or the holidays.
No, they got bought out by Toys R Us, I think, so that's down right now. But you can still go to New York. You can go to the Muppet Workshop, and you can build your own whatnot.
At Goldman Sachs.
It costs about $100, and he sent me a picture of he and his little cute daughter with her Muppet whatnot. So you want to thank Peter for that. And actually, God, I'm going on and on, but Peter had one of the big Fu Manchu mustaches like me.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about this?
No.
And I said, very cool, Peter. Thanks for sending this. I said, looks like you picked up a mustache while you were there. And he wrote back and said, no, I got that at the Sam Elliott Supply Center down the street or something like that.
Nice.
So Peter's a
client. Peter packed a picnic supper.
So that is all for the corrections. Now we have a few emails.
Oh, my God.
Josh and Chuck, I just listened to how Muppets worked. I was excited to hear you talk about it because you mentioned the costume designer for Miss Piggy, who happens to be my Aunt Callista.
Oh, wow.
If you look up the Muppet movie, you can see her in the costume and wardrobe department on IMDb. She worked closely with Henson, and I've actually seen a picture of her with Jim Henson setting up some Muppets in Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. She left the Muppets, I think, when Jim Henson died, but we still see her once a year. Mm. That's from Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh is, in fact, eating a Reese's cup. on to the next one. Hi, guys. I love your recent podcast. I was listening and thought I would mention that Jim Henson studied Muppetology at University of Maryland. I know this because I went to school there, and there is a Jim Henson Studies program, and it is our claim to fame. I didn't know he went to my school until I went there, and there is actually a little statue. It's a bench with Henson sitting on it, and Kermit sitting on the back of the bench, and they're kind of holding hands.
That is beyond cute.
It is very cute. So, and she also says that, this is from Alicia, that they have the rights to It Ain't Easy Being Green and Rainbow Connection, so their marching band actually plays that.
The University of Maryland?
Terrapins.
Terps?
Yeah, go Terps. Moving on.
Man, listen to this background music, Chuck. It is never
I know. We compared the Muppet Show to 30 Rock, and Phil of Linden, Washington has this to say. I was trying to imagine Sesame Street would look like in real life. Two little boys getting their own apartment. A giant bird that sleeps behind garbage cans. A few scattered, seemingly sensible adults who really have no jobs and nothing else to do.
No, Mr. Hooper had a store.
Oh, that's true. Finally, it hit me while working my job as a special ed classroom assistant. It is one big government-operated group home facility for special needs children and adults. Think about it. Bert displays classic Asperger syndrome. They share a bedroom and obviously have some adult taking care of the rest of their house. Oscar is schizophrenic with his mood swings, and a worm is a best friend, as is Big Bird with his imaginary friend. Was it Snuffleupagus?
Uh-huh.
And tell me Grover's not dealing with severe ADHD and Cookie Monster from manic bipolar tendencies. And the jobless adults, Gordon, Susan, and Bob. So that's from Phil.
Are they jobless adults or the caregivers?
He says they're jobless adults.
All right.
I've got two more. Jerry's laughing at how long this is going, but I warned her. I was listening to your fantastic podcast, and I had to write in. I am getting married at the Henson Soundstage next year.
Sweet.
So cool. He and his wife-to-be toured the soundstage. It was like being behind the scenes at the Muppet Show. We were honored as the first wedding ever to be hosted there. And I asked him, I wrote him back, he's like, dude, what's the hookup? And yeah. He had none. He just asked.
Huh.
They rented out to people, apparently, for things, and no one's ever thought to have a wedding there.
Wow.
And that is from, he gave us some facts, but we don't have time for that. That is from Dan and of TDFillustration.com, because he's a cool artist. I wanted to plug that from Dan. And finally, Josh. From Jake in Newport Richey, Florida, says, I was an accident of the 80s, and I missed the Muppet heyday, but I was lucky enough to have three older sisters and parents who had the foresight to ensure that they taped several seasons of the Muppet Show. So Jake is a big fan of the Muppets now, and he told us this fact, which I did not know. Since Jim Henson's death, Ralph the dog has not spoken and is seldom used, and it's my understanding that they do this out of reverence to Mr. Henson because Ralph was his favorite Muppet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Chuck just wiped away a tear.
Teary eye.
You sweet old softy.
So that's Muppet Mail. We got hundreds of pieces of mail and good blog response. And
yeah.
Thanks for sending them in. That was a good show.
Yeah, and we'll try to keep you supplied with more good shows in the future. If you want to send an email and try to make Chuck cry, it's not that hard. You can send it to stuff. podcast at howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called How Do Dogs Perceive Time? Originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on September 17th, 2009. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at howstuffworks.com as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org.
Hurt me many times before, but never this way. But I'm gonna wake up, giving you starting today. And love hurt me so. Something you gotta know. I won't be a fool.
I won't be a fool.
I'll be a fool.
Downtown Soulville. Mr. Fine Wine here on the Downtown Soulville Show on WFMU. Got a great show for you tonight. All kinds of interesting stuff. Got a Veterans Day set. Got a little Norton Records tribute. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary this weekend with four big nights at the Bell House, including one tonight. All kinds of great stuff. Soul 45s till 9 here on the Downtown Soulville Show. Let's hear first from an outfit called the Cellos.
This is the story of a crocodile. All names have been changed to protect the innocent. Here I am, lost from everyone. Believe me, it's not a bit of fun. Juicy Crocodile has been chasing me all day. Can't seem to shake, can't seem to get away. He got my friend. Better pull over to the side of the road. When it gets close, I'll play like a mole. You got my other friend.
Then with a great big crocodile, with a great big juicy smile. He is wondering what to do, whether to meet me or you.
Later for the talk about being bold. I see this crocodile ain't for being told. I think I'd better climb this here palm tree, and then it won't be able to capture me. You got my other friend, ooh. Climbing a palm tree. Well, I guess it's the way it was meant to be, because real soon he'll have eaten me.
World get fired.
They tell me go to